Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Brad Harbin. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, Kyle, doing great, man. Happy New Year to you and your family and everybody out there listening.
Yes, Brad, likewise, same wishes to you. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to listeners. It's 2022, so we've gone through the 2021 fantasy football season, and you know, champions have been crowned. You know, unfortunately, you get one champion per league, so a lot of other people aren't so happy, but that's the nature of the competition, right? If it was so easy to win and everyone won every league every year, we wouldn't find it so fun. So it's a lot of depressing nights losing, but for those that managed to win their leagues, the victory is all that sweeter. So congrats exactly. to everyone who did manage to win their leagues. And hopefully we helped in any way, shape at all. I know that's Brad and I, it's kind of what we want to do. We're here to help and talk fantasy.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's been a crazy year. I mean, you had to deal with COVID, obviously multiple injuries, and you know, some games were rescheduled. So you definitely had to, kind of project that out and plan ahead. And which I believe we covered on several episodes. So it's been a lot of fun this season with you, Kyle.
Yeah, and we'll be here every step of the way through the offseason. We love talking dynasty and the processes leading up to draft season again in the summer. And then we'll do it all over again next fall in the NFL football. Obviously, there's still some regular season and NFL playoff games to go. So focus more on that energy-wise. But yeah, still do think that we can take some lessons from 2021 and move them forward. But before any further delay, we do have a guest here, and I'd like to introduce him, Eric Romov from the Pros with Joes Charity League. So Eric, welcome, and appreciate you taking the time to join us, but also talk about your Pros with Joes League and everything that goes on there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Thank you both for having me on. And like you said, well wishes for the new year. Congratulations to all the fantasy champions out there. And the thing that I would really want to double click on is the concept that you sort of teased to, right? Like one team out of your entire league is the champion. So if you came up just short, if you were bounced out of the playoffs, like, you know, take solace in the fact that even that is incredibly difficult to do on a year in and year out basis. So if you came up a little bit short, all the more reason to sharpen your pencil in the off season, make another deep run in 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to, you know, keep moving forward. And in 2022, the Pros with Joes League will also continue. So why don't you let our listeners know exactly what the league is and what that entails?
Yeah. So Pros with Joes is a charity fantasy football league. We just wrapped up our second season in existence. We started not this past season, but in 2020 or the 2020 football season. And much like many of the charity leagues out there, it is a large pool kind of tournament style fantasy contest. What's different with ours is that as opposed to simply, you know, pitting industry experts against each other or inviting everyday players into an expert league, I should say, we actually pair up both pro industry expert and Joe, everyday player. So every single one of our experts that participates this year, we had 42. They are representing and raising money for a charity that is near and dear to their heart. And the way that we determine who they play with is basically anyone who donates to that charity is entered into a sweepstakes, into a drawing. We then draw the winner, and each of our 42 teams is essentially a pair of co-managers that then goes on to compete for an in-season pot that we raise from the start of the season through a little after the season. Actually, we're still raising money for this year's champion, Matt Harmon, who's playing for the Terrez Paylor Endowment at Howard University.
Yeah, so first off, I mean, any charity leagues, I think, are definitely, you know, we play fantasy Absolutely. Football and there's a lot of money involved, but you know, from the, you know, and we all enjoy it. Like we get so much pleasure, just the fantasy aspect, that the one thing we can do for having such a great opportunity to be in this community industry is to give back. And like you're saying, like each of the 42 pros, quote unquote, had their own charity. So not only is raising funds for those charities with the sweepstakes entries, but raising awareness for all those different charities, and the platform that you have with Pros with Joes just helps highlight all these different causes that exist. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things that I've come to really enjoy in, you know, the past couple of years of doing this, is just really, you know, being educated and becoming aware of the different organizations out there, right? Like we generally have someone representing, you know, all of the big ones, March of Dimes and American Cancer Society and Red Cross and sort of these household names. But I've also become familiar with some fairly niche organizations that are, you know, helping to rescue wildlife in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, or that are supporting, you know, disenfranchised youth in, you know, a very specific community. So it's really cool to, you know, kind of broaden my horizons on just how many organizations are out there trying to do good. And all of them, the like, big or small, they do such an outstanding, an amazing job of stretching a dollar. Right, you get a couple of bucks their way, and they can do so much with it. It's incredible, you know, being able to see some of the math behind the work that they do.
We love math here.
Oh yeah,
that's a good kind of math, because people are, you know, getting benefits from it. But Brad, do you have anything to say about this Pros with Joes concept?
No, I think it's fantastic. And first of all, I want to thank you for completing the trilogy of the beards. We all have the COVID beards, possibly, or I know that's when I started mine, was about 2 years ago. But no, in all seriousness, I think the, you know, having a league that, you know, directly you know, affects a charity. I mean, I'm certainly very close to something like that as well. My wife runs a nonprofit for foster and adoptive families, retreats, stuff like that. So I joined a couple of leagues as well, that you know, one went to a ministry, another one went to a different charity. So I think it's a great opportunity, also a great opportunity to you know, try and build the fantasy football community, it sounds like. I mean, trying to get, you know, people you know, teamed up with you know, the pros, you know, trying to help them, you know, learn the ropes and stuff like that. I think that's great. And that's just more listeners for us, hopefully, and that we can help down the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah, raising awareness for everyone. And yes, anyone who does listen to this, that's where you obviously get an advantage from that. But I think, like you're saying, Brad, like connecting the community. And Eric, mm-hmm. I know that you also hosted or co-hosted a podcast throughout the season, kind of talking to different of the pros that were in the league. And I was listening to a recent episode,
Dan Claskins.
Yeah, Dan Claskins. I think he mentioned he had never co-managed before in his, you know, decades of playing fantasy football. So like even just opening that experience to some of the more seasoned veteran pros seemed like that was kind of fun to, you know, and let the everyday Joe connect with him and see what the inside of a team building from some of these big renowned experts.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's really interesting. We went on in that episode to talk about how he and I both, you know, find interesting and almost have a table stakes item where each of the leagues we participate in has some different wrinkle, a different format, a different scoring system, a different rule. So while this is his only co-managed team, he grew to appreciate that this is the only team of his dozens and dozens that he now has to, you know, chat with someone about decisions and gets that input. And it's actually been kind of an interesting bit of feedback that I've gotten from a lot of our pros, just how much they welcome the outside opinion or the opinion of their co-manager in this process, right? We talked about math a little bit earlier. We can all get kind of stuck in a silo or in a vacuum of, you know, analyzing things and looking over the data over and over again. And just in a fresh perspective can really, you know, kind of broaden their perspective and help them, you know, see the forest through the trees, so to speak. So Dan definitely shared a sentiment along those lines. And I've heard that from a lot of our pros over the years.
So you mentioned you're still raising funds for this year. So where can people go to help to contribute and donate to the Pros with Joes?
Yeah. Easiest way to do it, if you check us out on Twitter at Pros with Joes, pinned up there at the top is a link to our fundraiser page, our in-season fundraiser that runs through this coming Monday at midnight. So that is the money that we've raised throughout the regular season, and that will go to this year's champion, Matt Harmon, who's raising money for an endowment, a scholarship in one of his colleague's name from Yahoo Sports, Terrence Paylor. Or you can go directly to our website, proswithjoes.com. Up there in the top banner, there's a button that says donate. It'll route you to the same page. So either of those are there. You know, as you're there, give a little, give a lot, whatever you can spare. Generally speaking, you won't miss it, and you'll probably feel pretty good about yourself after you do it, and it goes to a great cause. So if you are so inclined, please, please do consider supporting Matt's cause for the 2021 season.
And we'll try and do our part, like, you know, linking the Pros with Joes account whenever we tweet out about this episode, or even in the podcast descriptions, I'll maybe try and link that website page to where people could donate, just to help people out and find it. Because, yeah, you know, among a lot of great causes you could find there, but certainly try to raise money for Matt's charity and then that that scholarship. Because, yeah, great causes can come in all sorts of different forms, and someone will deservingly get that money somewhere. So Absolutely. Yeah, appreciate that. Appreciate Eric for coming on and talking about that. That's really great.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing your platform with me. It really goes a long way in getting the word out there.
We're now in 2022, but we can still look back on the 2021 fantasy season, and we can take some things away from that. And so one of the things I invited both Brad and Eric to do is for all of us to talk about one team in particular that did really well and what went right, and then one team that where things went wrong. And then also we're going to try and draw some more general lessons from all that. I try to do that on this show is, okay, talk about specific subjects. What can we draw large from that? Something we're kind of used to doing anyway, Brad. I hope we do a good job of that.
Yeah.
I'll fall first on the sword because we're talking about charity leagues, and we'll start with the bad. I think we want to end with the good, the title chasing at the end. So I'll start off falling on the grenade of the bad thing, so people get the good bad impression of me first. But charity leagues and the fantasy coaches in the summer did a charity league and also a charity pot-a-thon to raise money for the Humane Society, and helping a lot of animals out, and that's just as worthy a cause as helping out humans. We all share this planet as creatures and species, so helping each other out when we can anyway. And obviously I was glad to donate to that money and donate my time because I didn't win anything. Pretty bad. I think I won four games. I think I went like 4-10, and it's a little bit of a wrinkle because I'm always big on scoring settings. I'm drafting and trying strategies out based on what the scoring settings are saying. It's the super flex league, tight end premium, but also running backs got more points per reception than wide receivers. So my whole thing going to this draft was, I think I'm going to fade wide receiver, which I got my first wide receiver I drafted. I went back and looked at the draft board. 9th round, I drafted Brandon Cooks. That's actually probably pretty good value for a wide receiver. But then 10th round, Robbie Anderson, 12th round, Curtis Samuel. Like my wide receiver depth was just awful. And I made some, I think my best free agent pickups in the season were like Christian Kirk and Brandon Ayuk. So I was able to kind of just get like to a passable level at wide receiver. Like Kirk was probably the best value receiver I had all year. And I picked him up as a free agent for free, basically. Like that's value there. Right. So I went maybe too extreme on the value of okay, this is a draft to fade wide receiver. I think I pushed that too hard. I look back like, 5th round, Travis Etienne. And 6th round Trey Lance. Like, I don't think I got a start out of either of those two players this season. And, that's two pretty important picks, 5th and 6th round. Those should be like close to every week starters. And yeah, I got some extra value from Cooks in the 9th, but it didn't make up for basically wasting those two picks. The Trey Lance thing, I was maybe a little too aggressive on the rookie quarterbacks this year in general, redraft or dynasty. And then it kind of hurt me here. I took Daniel Jones, and that was basically the 1-2 punch. But the reason the league's called the secret play is because every week there's, 2 to 3 managers, and it changed week to week, who were the quote unquote secret play. If you, as the manager, won your week as a secret play, you got to then force a trade with your opponent. It had to be the same position and had to both be starters. So it had to be two players switched that were both in the starting lineups. But in terms of like having success in this league, it was super important to win those weeks to be able to steal players. And I didn't win any of my weeks. I only won 4 weeks, right? So clearly didn't do so well. And I never won the week where I was the secret player. I think I had two or three opportunities through the season. I remember the 1 week where I was playing against the Justin Jefferson manager. I almost had it. And I was kind of like, ooh, I might get Justin Jefferson on my team, but no. But and I think part of for this league, that was key to improving your teams, not just through the waiver wires. And you could make trades as well. But it was really through winning those secret play weeks. And I actually lost. I started my draft, Travis Kelce, Dak Prescott, and I lost Dak in the middle of the season, losing a secret play week. So it was kind of really important and key, but I look back and, my draft wasn't great, and, if you don't do great in draft in a redraft, it's really tough to kind of work your way through the waiver wire and trades to build your way back up. And I had some good running backs. And again, Travis Kelce was a decent pick, maybe not the league winning difference maker we would have hoped as a first round pick, but I had some all right plays, but just not enough depth to when it really mattered, when I was losing Dak Prescott, having that wake up that morning. Okay. You've Dak Prescott has been traded for Teddy Bridgewater. That wasn't really good. And that really sunk my team. But yeah, so in this league, it was all about obviously winning as much as you could, like every week, but winning the key weeks and not losing the key weeks, which you didn't really know. You never knew if you were going up against the secret play, right? I mean, you knew if you were the secret play that week, but you never really knew if you were going up against it. So that was kind of the tricky aspect too. So that's my team that again went 4-10 in the fantasy coaches secret play. And I, again, shout out to Coach Steve, Coach Jibs for organizing that charity league for the Humane Society. So Eric, as our guest, do you want to go next?
Yeah. So I guess where I stepped in it, in this last season wasn't exclusively isolated to a single league. And I think it more so has to do with kind of a macro theme or lesson learned on the season. And that is the importance of depth, right? Forever and ever, I have been a big fan of consolidation trades. And in this year, more than any, it seemed like every time I made a consolidation trade, I would immediately lose out on one of my starters and woefully miss the depth that I just traded away, right? So a lot of the teams that I had that missed the playoffs or that made it in and were immediately bounced out were ones that, like everybody, were dealing with player availability, injuries, COVID issues. And, while having that upside player on my roster, played somewhat of a role in me getting there, having to run them out alongside a replacement level or worse player that I picked up off the scrap heap was ultimately the death nail for my season on those teams. And, conversely, the teams where I wasn't successful in pulling off that trade or, biding my time a little bit more and kind of stood put with my depth were the ones that made deeper runs. So, that's something that I think we hear a lot that, depth is material to your fortunes in fantasy. But, specifically over these last few years, really can be make or break. And I was bit by that a couple of times. The other thing that comes to mind is we all do a lot of drafts. We seem to have more and more teams every single year. And I've kind of gotten into this bad habit where as I get into my last couple of drafts of the season, I'll start reaching for players just because I don't have any exposure to them. Guys where I'll be sitting around the fifth round and it's like, I don't have any Allen Robinson yet. Yeah, let's give it a go. And then my Allen Robinson team is bottomed out, right? So I am a proponent of, balancing exposures across your portfolio of teams, but don't just do something for, the sake of trying something different, right? Make sure that, if that's a, kind of a tiebreaker or a hair splitter, that's fine, but ultimately stick to your board, right? You've worked all off season in analyzing and determining the players that you want to target, and don't break from that just for the sake of trying something new and mixing it up a little bit.
I get like that too. Okay. The last redraft right, league or two, right.
It's always
like,
okay, the last one. Yeah.
Who do I not have any on any teams? Like I'll try and get that guy. But I agree in a sense of, okay, if I don't have a player in dynasty, that's okay. Next year, I'll just target them in redraft and I'll at least get my exposure to them that way. So I kind of like cross format, try and cover my bases. I know famously we talked about it, Brad, how much Juju Smith-Schuster I had in redraft leagues, exactly. Which is great to have, because I had, you know, I think I talked about like all my Deontay Johnson shares are in Dynasty and all my Juju shares are in redraft, but it balances itself out. And now I got Deontay on some Dynasty teams and he did pretty good. And all the Juju redraft teams, well, they're done. They're redraft. It's done. So I don't have to worry about having, you know, wasting my Juju picks. It's funny because that secret play was one of the leagues where I didn't reach on Juju and still didn't work for me. Gotcha. So. Brad, any fortunate stories for you in fantasy this year?
Well, I mean, truthfully, it's going to sound, you know, similar. It's going to sound like a broken record. It's the lack of depth. Most prominent was the standard league that I talked about, which was very touchdown heavy driven. I think I did so many mock drafts. I did so many other redrafts that were PPR. I think it kind of messed with my head because I was actually going for a dynasty in this league. I won it the last 2 years, always had a, you know, got to get those guys that are going to score the touchdowns. And I feel like I did that early on. I went Derrick Henry and CEH. But I think where I messed up was thinking about Hockenson and sure, he got the volume at certain times, but he didn't really get in the end zone that much. I could have gotten Mark Andrews, kind of missed up there. But really, the going back to the depth thing for, I don't know, 5-6 weeks, and obviously lost all five of those 5 or 6 weeks. I had Kyler Murray, Derrick Henry, and CEH all out at the same time, which not really having any backups. You know, kind of reaching for Hockenson possibly in a standard league where I did. I want to say I went fifth with him. I missed out on a you know, possible solid wide receiver. I had Thielen. Of course, he had a few weeks where he missed, but I mean he was obviously touchdown driven. He had, you know, he could score a little bit, but I missed out on that opportunity. So really, just at that second wide receiver spot in the tight end, just wasn't getting any touchdown production. I think the other thing that kind of suffered that caused me to suffer a little bit in that league. It was focusing on Kyler Murray. I mean, I love watching the guy play. But I think I focused too much on his possible rushing upside, which was considerably down this year compared to other seasons. And of course, you know, obviously him, I'm missing some games. So I think when I go back to that league next year, which I keep telling myself I'm not going to do it because it's kind of a lame lead. There's no trading or anything like that, but I know I'll get sucked into it and I'll just have to have a better, you know, understanding of, you know, focusing on those guys who I feel are going to get the touchdowns, get back on that saddle and try and reclaim my prize. But yeah, really once those injuries came, I was pretty much decimated. I mean, I was forced to play like Cortland Sutton, Brandon Ayuk when he wasn't getting hardly any targets at the wide receiver. So, I mean, it was a bad few weeks there for me. And I was sad to see the crown go away from me, but you know, 2022 is around the corner. So start doing my homework now.
I missed out on a three-peat as well this year. So I feel you, Brad, but I think like just to specifically touch on Kyler Murray, did you have thoughts of like, maybe not have him ranked as the QB1, but you like, I'm guessing you were thinking, he has a decent enough percentage chance to be the QB1 at the end of the season, right?
I want to say Al Allen went early, and actually the guy who won the whole thing, he drafted him, I want to say in the first round, which is actually, you know, kind of surprising, but in a standard league, I guess it kind of makes sense. I mean, you know, with his rushing upside and I want to say I took Kyler as the second quarterback overall, but yeah, I'm just like thinking, you know, and like I said, touchdown driven, you get 6 points for a passing touchdown instead of 4 in some of the PPR in most of the PPR leagues. So kind of that mindset, would have been better for me to hold off and, you know, get a Rodgers or a Brady, obviously. I mean, of course, hindsight's 2020, but you know, get somebody who's gonna, you know, obviously be available, be durable, you know, not take chances, run the ball and getting hurt. So, I mean, kind of went away from that. So, I mean, and pretty much my plan, because last year, like I said, I won. I did have Rodgers as my quarterback along with Derrick Henry. But, Yeah, I mean, I think I just kind of – I thought – and at the beginning of the year, I mean, it looked like the Cardinals were, you know, a legit team. I mean, you know, they were – offense was looking good. There were slumps here and there, but obviously it didn't really start slumping until the end of the year there. And, I mean, they're still going to possibly be limping into the playoffs, and a lot of that has to do with the quarterback play and what's been going on there. So, yeah.
Yeah, like even if you didn't wait as long to get to the Brady Rodgers range, if you had waited a round or two, taking Herbert perhaps,
sure,
like,
yeah,
even that you could have got an extra,
absolutely,
second round pick, and
yeah,
you know, but again, it's, you know, you might have not, you might have passed on Murray and taken another running back who got hurt too, right, or another player that also got injured. So as much as we can kind of sit back and, you know, which strategy work, what positions to target, at the end of the day, it is still about taking the right positions. Cause like you were saying, like, you know, going Josh Allen in the first round in a single quarterback league, that's like, you know, in our day and age of so much super flex, we're all really kind of conditioned to say, like, you're not taking quarterbacks in the first round. No way.
Right.
And, you know, it didn't matter, you know, cause you know, obviously he didn't win the league because he went Josh Allen in the first round. That other manager won the league because they probably nailed a lot of their other picks and had other really solid pieces throughout. Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably made some good waiver moves throughout as well. You can't, you know, you're never going to just win in the draft, but certainly like a move like that, you could look at it and see like, oh, that'd be something almost, you might lose your draft if you reach too early on the quarterback in the first round. But how many first round picks this year didn't pay off? I mean, like, I know you went Derrick Henry in the first round, and until he got hurt, he was amazing. He was a true difference maker, where he was outscoring every other running back by a decent enough margin, almost kind of like what Jonathan Taylor's done the second half of the season.
Yeah.
So like, even it's tough to say Henry's a big miss, but like the other guys that got hurt, like McCaffrey, I think played less games than Henry this year. Mm-hmm. Zeke really didn't step up to be the number one guy. Dalvin Cook stopped catching passes this year. A much lower reception total than what we'd seen. I guess in a standard league, that doesn't really matter, but you're still less yards accumulated. So there were a lot of first round picks that failed. Mm-hmm. So Josh Allen, even though you'd think maybe a reach from that position standpoint, at least he was producing the points, and I believe is the quarterback one on the year. So,
oh yeah.
I mean, if you're going to reach on the quarterback in the first round, they better finish as the QB one.
The other one. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Eric, did you have any thoughts about any of the three leagues that we all discuss? Any big takeaways from all that?
Yeah. The thing that came to mind a moment ago, back to the Kyler Murray conversation, is I randomly ended up with a lot of Kyler Murray this year. And usually I'm one to wait on quarterbacks. That's very much so, you know, the kind of in vogue strategy that most people take. And maybe that's another lesson to kind of glean out of this, right? Like at a certain point, you know, rules like wait on quarterback, or, you know, a running back draft strategy, or whatever it might be, like at a certain point, value trumps all of that, right? So, you know, I would kind of went in intending to wait for a longer period of time on my quarterback, but, you know, look up in the sixth, seventh round of a redraft league, and there's Kyler Murray staring at you. Like, you have to be willing to, you know, kind of adapt your strategy and capitalize on that kind of value. And, you know, for the teams that I had him, you know, it was a bit of a bumpy road. I ended up winning the title in two of the leagues where I had him, but really had to scramble for that kind of mid-season window where he was unavailable due to injury, right? But you know, the point persists. Like, you sort of have to, you know, make it a point to first and foremost play the board, you know, to whatever extent your strategy allows, and adapt based on the value that comes to you.
I think I only had two teams with Kyler Murray this year. One was a dynasty, one was a redraft. I actually ended up winning the dynasty league, and just with that mid-season, you know, like how to get quarterbacks. I remember trading 2/3 to get Taylor Heineke. Probably would have been right around week 6, week 7. I think Kirk Cousins by week 7. I needed that other starter. So, and then, I mean, I think at that point people were still maybe not convinced Heineke was going to start the entire season. Is Fitzpatrick going to come back at that point? Like, there's still maybe, right, Brad? I mean, I know I was kind of pushing the narrative hard. As soon as Fitzpatrick got injured, I thought,
yeah,
my thinking was this could be all year for Heineke. And so I was willing to buy in. And again, 2/3 seems like nothing when you win the title. Pretty sure, because it's a dynasty league, and you know, if you've got enough roster spots and you could pull it off, I know at points, even in the offseason, I was rostering Colt McCoy and Chris Trevler. I don't know who the backup's going to be. Give me anyone who's on this Cardinals depth chart. Because if I lose Kyler Murray, at least I got the backups. And, you know, Chris Trevler is pretty useless this year, but I think the idea still stand. You know, I might hold Colt McCoy going into this offseason. I'm usually in, you know, in Dynasty, even in Superflex, you know, those backup quarterbacks, like you could probably gain someone else for free who also is a backup quarterback. So without really worth holding, you never know who's going to get the jobs. Colt McCoy could lose his backup job, right? But I think that's one where, because Kyler Murray is important enough, I might hold Colt McCoy. And it's just, again, we're circling back to this conversation, depth. Where do you have depth? And do you have depth at the right spots? I talked about that one league I went back to. I had good depth at running back. And I mean, you know, Trey Lance, I suppose, counts as depth at quarterback, but I didn't have the depth at the one position where I didn't even really have like starters drafted to be, you know, worthy of being started every week. So it's one of those where it's tricky, right? Because there's positions where you want to go early, but you also, the depth's important to those positions. Talk about running back in particular, I think, right? Like you want to go early, but you also want to go late. So how many running backs can you afford to put on your roster and still be okay at other positions? It's part of the balancing game of all that. And that equation probably changes league to league based on the settings, league size, like just starting requirement, like how many positions or how many players each position you need to start and total starters. So it's a fun equation that you kind of have to almost recalculate for every league.
Yeah. Going back to the point about the person who drafted Josh Allen in the first round, you know, there's the adage of you generally won't win your league in the first round, but you can certainly lose it. And, you know, Josh Allen being available and contributing throughout the year, you know, certainly played a role in that team's eventual success. I was talking about this with the guys over at Livewire. I did a pod with them a few days ago, and that is very much so part of my evaluation on first round running backs, right? It's not only the opportunity, the skill set, the potential, but I will put a premium on a player that has clear visibility to who their handcuff is, right? So that way you're not playing this guessing game and you can know, you know, definitively I've locked up the running back production for the Vikings or the Cowboys or whoever it might be. So that, you know, that saves you from having to speculate on, you know, second and third stringers that may or may not get the job. But also, you know, you've got that baked in contingency plan. So definitely an interesting, you know, kind of point of view or, you know, take to look at, you know, which of these starters has a defined handcuff, because that makes the in-season maneuvering a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I remember, because I go back to one year where Matt Forte was in Chicago, and Kadeem Carey is going to be his handcuff. And I definitely remember taking that. And then when Forte got hurt, either Carey was hurt or he wasn't doing well, and there was someone else that got the majority of the carries. It's like, okay, well, I guess we don't know. And I guess we can see why Kadeem Carey's in the CFL now. Oh, he did look pretty good with Saskatchewan last year, I got to say. CFL talk aside, this is NFL fantasy football, of course. Brad, did you have anything to add? We're talking about all these depressing teams that let us down.
Nothing else, really. I mean, I'm ready to move on to some positivity here, Kyle. What do you got for me?
Well, again, I think it'll be nice, and we'll let the guest go first. So, Eric, why don't you brighten our day and talk about a team where things went right for you and why things went right, and what, you know, some good decisions that you made that contributed.
Yeah. So I'll talk about a team where things went right and I was most surprised by that outcome. And that's actually a dynasty league that we started up. I think it was around this time last year with several of the contributors and analysts over at Going for Two. And at the time, drafting in January, I immediately took some kind of high risk, high reward lines on this build. It's a super flex league. It's a deep bench. It's a deep starting roster. And I went out and speculated on Taysom Hill getting this job immediately, or on Aaron Rodgers leaving and Jordan Love being an asset from the get-go, you know, so on and so forth, to the point where a few weeks into the season, it looked like I was immediately in rebuild mode. there was not a whole lot to be excited about on this roster. I had a couple of decent pieces, but most of my pieces were younger, you know, a bit more speculative in nature. And as opposed to, you know, it's kind of throwing my hands up, you know, maybe trying to trade off some assets for you know, draft picks in years to come, I just continued to churn the bench, right? It is a deep league. It is an experts league. So there's not a whole lot out there, but anytime that, you know, someone's handcuff or someone's backup was out there on the wire, anytime that there was maybe a developmental player that wasn't getting a whole lot of run now, but could have, you know, opportunity down the road or in years to come, just really made it a point to try to continue to turn over that bench and add as many pieces as I could. And suddenly things started to break in my favor, right? Jonathan Taylor started to really pick up around, you know, week 4 or 5. Brandon Ayuk came back to life. You know, T. Higgins started to pump it up. And all of a sudden, I made my way to the championship game. I proceeded to get boat raced by Jeff Lambert. But nonetheless, I was, you know, sitting looking at this team 2 or 3 weeks in thinking that, you know, I was in the first year of a 3-year process or so. And because I made it a point to stay disciplined and look for guys that could have opportunity if the ball bounces the right way, you know, was able to plug in pieces like Freeman, like Devonta Freeman on my bench, Tony Pollard, as he started to pick up, he was a player that I acquired by way of trade. So it was really more a lesson in just always, you know, keeping a sharp eye for player acquisition and trying to find those upside plays that, you know, could have a contributing role should things break the right way.
And Jeff showing why he's the big boss at going for two. He knows what he's doing.
Absolutely. I mean, it was end to end. He easily had the best draft. He immediately came out swinging and just absolutely plowed his way through the playoffs. I want to say in our matchup specifically, he had a bit of a down week and he beat me by a good 45 points.
That's a good feeling. Your down week still crushes your opponent. Sorry, Eric. Yeah. So Brad, do you have any comments to make about Eric and just like the process through that dynasty team that he made?
No, I mean, I think he showed a lot of patience and that's what you need. I mean, one thing I fell into, and I know it's not necessarily my turn yet, but was possibly trying to be a little bit too aggressive with trades and not really. I mean, I definitely pulled off some good trades, but I probably should have been a little more patient and being a hold idea with some of the players. But I mean, it really just you know, it depends on how your roster's looking. And you know, if something doesn't seem right, I mean, you know who you wanted going into the draft. I mean, and if you didn't get them, you could, you know, go after them. But most likely there's a player that's comparable that's actually already on your team. So, you know, how much are you willing to give up for that? So I think just demonstrating the patience and I mean, I certainly found myself being very aggressive in one league, and it eventually paid off, but if anything, you know, gave me some headaches as well. So I mean, I think just, you know, like Eric said, you know, being patient and letting things happen is certainly a way to go.
And Eric, you mentioned you're picking up the backup running backs, the injury away guys with opportunities. At any point did you sell off any of those guys to acquire more draft capital?
Yeah, it got to a point where I had just about everyone's handcuff that was still available. So as we got closer to the trade deadline, definitely moved on from some speculative pieces for future compensation. There was actually a day in particular where I traded off Garner Minshew to the Jalen Hurts owner. And I had a second backup quarterback. Oh, it was Mitchell Trubisky to the Josh Allen owner. You know, pieces that, you know, apart from that one week, really didn't stand to contribute to my team this year. By this point, I was starting to, you know, kind of make the turn to where it looked like I was going to compete here in 2021. And so, you know, everywhere that I could, flipped around these pieces to try to regain some draft capital and actually flipped those back into a package to add another piece here or there to kind of bolster my run, right? You know, flipped one of the draft picks that I got for Hunter Henry, who was, you know, markedly better than my bottom of the barrel tight end, right? So I think activity and movement is really the theme, right? You have to always be taking a critical eye to your roster and, you know, how you can potentially do something now that will better position you for a move a few weeks or even a season or so down the road.
I don't think it all has to be so linear, black and white. Okay, if I'm competing, I want to buy as much. If I'm rebuilding, I want to sell as much. Like, you could do a mix of both. Like, and I mean, you proved it, right? Like, you were still willing to sell off the assets that you needed to, and we're still able to make it to the finals. So as a contending team, you could still sell off pieces, get draft, and specifically talking dynasty, acquire draft capital, even if you're contending, because you can use that draft capital to, as you mentioned, package that to buy a better player than what you would have got initially. And so, like, you know, if you a lot of times managers will be like that. If you, as a competitor, want to buy from other competitors, you likely won't be doing it by selling them other, or I said that backwards. It's going to be very confusing, Dynasty. But the idea is, you know, as a competitor, if you want to go to another competitor, rarely are they going to actually sell you straight to you, because they know that you're competing. You almost got to go through different teams. I'm going to make a trade here to make another trade there, and you kind of, so, you know, with those other competitors, you're likely going to sell them players that you're hoping they don't use against you later, but then use those picks to buy from teams that are rebuilding. That's where you're going to get the better value at players that you could use in your lineup for relatively cheaper. So yeah, those ideas of not living in just one extreme or the other. And I know I tend to do that in life a little too much. So fantasy helps me kind of find that balance a little bit.
Yeah, it was definitely, those are wise words. And it was sort of an organic way for it to play out with this dynasty team in particular, right? You know, going through the evolution of my team is years away to now I've rattled off a couple of wins to, do I have a competitor on my hands, right? Like, it allowed me to, you know, really, you know, kind of play both sides of the fence. And I think that it, you know, it worked to my benefit in the end of this 2021 run.
So Brad, I think I want to save your team for the end, because I want to circle back to the charity discussion really that we started with. It'd be, I think, a nice way to end there. So I'm going to insert my team, because I don't think there's a good transition here, because similar to what you were saying, Eric, it's the patience. And even if things aren't immediately going right from, you know, the first month, you know, just because you're not doing well in September doesn't mean your team is absolutely eliminated from contention and you won't win the title. It just means, okay, I've got work to do. I've got steps to take. I've got to really add players or just make better start sit decisions at times. So one of the teams that I won, my only redraft win, actually, it's funny because it's we'll transition to redraft here, but it is, I found a bit larger roster for redraft league. I mean, I don't know what Brad and Eric, you guys are accustomed to, but normally I do redraft, you might have about 15 to 20 roster spots total. Like, it's not usually massive. I rarely see redraft leagues go over 20 for total roster spots. In this league, it was 27. And I thought, oh, that's, and I think that was the whole purpose, wow, though. It was like, I know it was Nate Williams at Nate NFL, I believe is his Twitter account. I should have wrote that down. sorry, Nate. But anyway, he invited me, I guess one of his friends was commissioning. And I think the idea was, it was a redraft league, but with sort of a dynasty mentality in terms of build, deep rosters, I think only start 10. So it was a lot of bench spots in particular. We're talking, you know, 17 bench spots. And so for that idea was, okay, the waivers won't necessarily, you know, something more close to dynasty league waiver wires where it's not a ton of players every week. You got to really pick your spots. And so I thought, in a sense, I played dynasty up to this point. So I kind of knew how to approach that. So it was just taking that dynasty mentality of knowing how to team build and take it to a redraft team, not so worried about the age and really just focus on one season. And I mean, obviously I won it, so I had success. But I think we could talk all we want about pick these strategies, but at the end of the day, it's pick the right players. And, you know, this is a Jonathan Taylor team. My first round pick was Jonathan Taylor, probably the best first round pick you could have made in most leagues. So I'm sure there's a lot of managers who got far. I don't know if their intention was to take Jonathan Taylor, but got far, got to the championships even because they chose Jonathan Taylor as their first round pick. We were talking about not missing, and he was the one where if you took him, that was the biggest hit you could make in the first round. I had four Jonathan Taylor teams. Three of them made it to the finals. One of them was just awful. That was more my fault. I couldn't take the good juju of having him as my first round pick and take that into a good team coming forward. But other than that, you know, four Jonathan Taylor teams, three in the finals, two of them won. Cooper Kupp would have been the same thing for wide receiver in terms of his difference making level. I had three Cooper Kupp teams. All of them made it to the finals. One with one of them. It's funny. I had a Jonathan Taylor and Cooper Kupp team that lost in the finals. Figured that would be the one heavy favorite, but it's almost crazy that I only had one Jonathan Taylor Cooper Kupp team, because that's a build that most people could have done. They were going, you know, Kupp or Taylor first, maybe second round pick, Cooper Kupp third to fourth. So you probably could have got away with having, especially if you were at the back end of the first round, there was probably a lot of teams that could have gone Taylor Kupp. And I don't know if like Brad or Eric, you had any teams with those two, but it's probably strange how so few managers had that combo, but that combo was there. Like if you took that, you were in pretty good shape. And it was there to have for a lot more than what all of us really had. Again, I had 21 teams and only had that combo on one. That feels almost like a bit of a failure. Like I should have had more of that.
Yeah. It was absolutely within reach of everybody who is drafting, right? So often we see, you know, people asking about trades or, you know, asking what to do with their roster. And it's like, are you in a four-person league? Like, how did you put this team together, right? But, you know, for those two players in specific, I mean, there was a beautiful like 10 or 14 day window. I think it was around the end of July where Taylor started slipping into the second round even, right? And Kupp was, you know, fourth, fifth rounder in a lot of places. So that option was on the board for all of us. And it seemed like very few actually got there. All of my teams that played in the championships this year, both winners and losers, either had Kupp or Taylor. Neither of them had it together. But oddly enough, this year in the Pros with Joe's tournament, Scott Engel had the Taylor Kupp combination and got bounced out in the semis. Very, very surprising. We were reviewing his roster heading into that matchup with Michael Florio. And I mean, both of us, myself and my host, John, were incredibly confident that just on the backs of those two players, he had a base of 50 points that would be really hard to overcome. And sure enough, they both had kind of down weeks by their standards, and he didn't even make it to the finals.
Yeah. So before I keep going, Brad, do you have any like just thoughts on like Jonathan Taylor and Cooper Kupp? Because again, number one running back this year, number one wide receiver. That was probably key to a lot of victories, was having either of those two, or if you were lucky enough, both.
Yeah, man. Just you know, thinking back in the opportunity that combination was there for the taking. I mean, I don't think it matters, you know, what type of league or how many teams there were. I mean, I have a feeling I'd have to look back, but I don't think Kupp went till like maybe late fourth or fifth in one of the leagues, which, you know, of course we didn't know what was going to go on, you know, who Stafford was going to favor, you know, Woods was still there. We didn't know, but yeah, just to think about that combination is quite something. I mean, as a matter of fact, with our dynasty league, I drafted Jonathan Taylor. I want to say first as well. And I also had a Derrick Henry. So at the, and they really kind of helped offset, because Taylor started off, you know, kind of slow and you know, I was definitely riding Henry for a while, but then of course Henry got hurt and I was able to ride Jonathan Taylor. Actually on a really nice run there, and then I just ran into a buzzsaw because I don't have any good quarterbacks, but yeah, no, I mean, having Kupp and Taylor is certainly a dream, and it's definitely something to look back on and reflect and say, hey, you know, that could have happened to me, you know, I could have had those guys. So I mean, that's certainly important about you know, looking back at your season.
Anyway, so we'll just quickly go back to this league. So is again, I think Nate Williams for inviting me. And it's funny because it the scoring settings actually were similar to the other league I was talking about, the Fantasy Coaches Secret Play League, where running backs and tight ends, I think, got 1.5 PPR, but then wide receiver was down at, I think, 1.25. So it was okay. Fade the wide receiver. I kind of went with that approach again. Go early on the running backs. And I'm looking at, like, specifically which running backs. So Taylor at 108, which, crazy value, probably should have been the 101, but no one knew that. So he was not going the 101 in any league, but you know, I think clearly the best first round pick. So I kind of got lucky that he fell to me there. But also, I remember thinking it was an easy decision to take him too. I thought, to me, because I remember looking at the draft, Kelsey had gone just before, and that would have been maybe the decision there. Okay, with the tight end premium, I might go Kelsey. Without Kelsey, I thought, you know what, this to me screamed of, I want to go Jonathan Taylor here. And I remember looking at that board, not really liking everyone else. So I thought it was a pretty easy decision, but I know even 108 seemed like a little, at that point, a little high, because Eric, especially, there was times where he was even falling to the second round. So maybe just the conviction on Taylor. I was happy that I was sad I just didn't get more of him, honestly. But it was, I think a key to the success of this team is nailing three running backs at three different points of the draft. So Jonathan Taylor in the first round, I took Devin Singletary in the ninth round. And I mean, and Daryl Williams, 19th round. And all three of those guys were super key to, I had a couple teams that had that trio of running back on it in the championship round. So that was seeing all those touchdowns come in, especially for Singletary and Williams. They're kind of happening at the same time. All of a sudden, okay, neither of them have found the end zone. All of a sudden, four touchdowns combined between them. So that was kind of a nice period. But, like, funny that, talk about the Secret Play League, this is another league where I took Travis Etienne in the fifth round. But this one, I guess I had better running back depth. I know this draft is also much deeper than that other draft. I look at, I missed on some key picks. Allen Robinson in the third round, Etienne in the fifth, Juju in the sixth. And I guess the one last lesson I want to share with people, I started the season 0-3. I went back and I remember thinking, like, maybe I'm not panicking, but thinking, okay, this might be not be the team I thought it was going to be as good as it was. And so started 0-3, but I just kept grinding, kind of like you were saying, Eric, just to keep head down, just keep being patient, keep doing the work you need to every week. And then I pulled off five straight wins after that, got to a playoff spot, and then just didn't give it up. And then, eventually won the league again on the backs of those three running backs, Jonathan Taylor, Devin Singletary, and Daryl Williams. But again, it was hitting them at different points in the draft, and Daryl Williams is a 19th round pick, is such great value for what, again, like Eric, you talked about this earlier too, knowing the clear handcuffs. To me, he seemed like a pretty clear handcuff behind CEH. So I was willing to take him in quite a few spots where he might've gone undrafted in a lot of leagues. And I know a few leagues where just the last round or two, okay, just get Daryl Williams in there, get a Chiefs running back and life will be good. Brad, did you want to talk about your team that had some success this year?
Sure, I can kind of go through it here. So basically, the league that I won is the ministry league, which I talked about before. Basically, it's the money goes to a ministry that actually, I know I'm going to say minister a lot, actually ministers to ministers out in like remote places. So for instance, this guy, you know, he travels to Brazil and kind of in the woods parts of Minnesota, you know, just ministers who are trying to build a church or whatever. And he pours into them and, you know, shows them a good time, lets them know that, that they're doing a good thing. So it's actually three leagues in one of, three 14 team leagues. So in order to win the whole thing, you got to win your league and have more points than the other two guys that win their league. So all that to say, what happened with this draft is something that I did not plan at all. It actually kind of came across as almost like a zero running back theory. I didn't get a running back till the fourth round, and that happened to be Damian Harris. Now, I know I've been plugging Damian Harris since the summer, and I felt good about it, but really he was like the only, I guess, lead back at that point, because I kind of waited a little too long. It started off with Kelsey, Ridley, and Cooper. You know, it was kind of locking up those positions, but then like everybody was taking all the running backs. I'm like, I mean, I thought I would get Harris, you know, further down, and just all the running backs kind of going. I mean, it really just ended up with running back as far as selected was Harris, Devin Singletary, and Javonte Williams, which once again, I've been plugging Javonte Williams. I thought that he would eventually get the role in Denver, but of course that didn't happen. And then also it just seemed like the quarterbacks were flying off too. I felt okay with who I drafted, which was Tannehill at the time, you know, with that offense and the new weapons and everything, but obviously that didn't work out. So really my strategy and what worked out for me this year, I know I kind of talked about, you know, being patient and everything. However, in this instance, I was very aggressive. So my wide receivers that I drafted were once again, Ridley, Cooper, Cooks, and AB. So after week two, I started shopping AB as quick as I could. And I was able to get, you know, get him traded. I can't exactly remember who I got for him now that I think about it. I think it's somebody who got hurt. So, but that's okay. And then, but AB eventually, you know, went through a spell of not being able to play as well. So, and then I was able to shop Cooks just because of the, I felt with the quarterback change in Houston with Tyrod, you know, going out, obviously Cooks had a great first game against the Jaguars. He was, you know, the main target for the Texans, but I just felt like, Davis Mills is going in there. I'm not really sure what's going to happen, and I can shop him around. And I was able to get the guy who I wanted at running back, and that's James Conner. I felt that James Conner was going to go into Arizona, eventually take over that role. Sure, a little bit of it had to do with injury, but even when he was in a timeshare, he was finding the touchdowns. Week after week, I think he ended up with 17, 18 touchdowns. So that's the guy who I targeted in the draft, but somebody got him, you know, right before me. So I felt good about getting Connor in there. And then about midway through, I don't think I was like necessarily 0-3. I was maybe sitting like, I don't know, 3-3, but I had only won like two games by like less than a point. Like, thank you, Daniel Carlson, kicker on Monday Night Football or something like that. So I was hurting. Obviously, Tannehill was bothering me. So I just kind of looked around and I saw that, you know, somebody had Joe Burrow and I want to say Russell Wilson. So, of course, before Wilson got hurt. So I decided to go after Burrow. I liked what he had schedule wise in the playoffs. That's definitely something I kind of looked at. And I was and he also had a Hunter Renfrow. And at the time, Renfrow was starting to, you know, see some targets. Waller was still in the mix, so he wasn't, you know, getting all the targets like he ended up doing later in the year. But I was able to package a deal for two Broncos, Javonte Williams and Cortland Sutton for Burrow and Renfrow. And that obviously saved my season. Having Burrow as the, you know, pretty much the fantasy MVP that during the playoffs. So what I learned was to get out there early. I mean, I certainly had some nice wide receivers that people would want because, and a lot of that happened because of the draft. As I mentioned, a lot of the running backs went before I started selecting them. So I was able to really hedge those and, you know, get, I was able to make a move on Ridley, which I feel kind of bad because really the next week is when he called it a quits. But I kind of saw that, you know, him not traveling. I was like, that's interesting. I think I'm going to go ahead and try and shop him and see what I can get. So, I mean, it was really just being aggressive and getting after it every single day. Also, I didn't really look when it came to waiver wires or even trades. I didn't really necessarily pay too much attention to the projections. I leaned on Kyle's goal line guide really to kind of see what the, you know, what that player's defense or what that player was going against defensively and what that opportunity was as well. And I really focused probably this year more than anything, really focused on the matchups. I mean, I certainly bang the drum when it comes to looking at the matchups, but I really looked at him this year and, you know, who was hot, you know, what defense are going against, what's the situation, how is their team, you know, what's the split on rushing and passing, and a little bit more. And I mean, I credit this show and having to be prepared and learning a little bit more instead of just trusting my eye test and really kind of getting in there and learning things. But, But yeah, for me to come out victorious in that league, it was about being aggressive and looking at matchups. I mean, my running backs in the final week were Damian Harris, you know, going against the Jaguars. I felt good about that. Granted, Stevenson took a couple touchdowns away from him, but I also picked up Dare Ogunbowale in Jacksonville. Reason being is he was going to be the only running back. I thought that he would get a trash TD. Sure enough, he did. To kind of help, get me over the hump there. And so, I mean, just the fact that I won a league with Dare Ogunbowale as one of my starting running backs is pretty, pretty amazing. I mean, of course, Joe Burrow was running the ship, but Dare certainly helped us out that week. But yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at with that.
It's interesting because, you know, redraft, it's the draft and it's the waiver pickups and adding the free agents and turning your bench throughout the season. Those are the keys to it, but we don't necessarily talk about trading and redraft that much. And you kind of showed, Bradley, it was super key to your strategy, acquiring guys like Burrow, Renfro, especially Burrow, how well he did in the playoffs and moving off the value you had before it was sunk cost and didn't have any value. And I think that's the key is the timing of the trades, right? You were very convicted on selling these guys, whether their value is still high, to get players that were useful to you. And you did it. Right. You probably traded for Burrow when he was still kind of, you know, the knee wasn't that super solid yet. He wasn't running as much. So we maybe, I think at that point, maybe T. Higgins might've been hurt too. So less weapons too.
Well, right.
So probably a bit of a down for Burrow, maybe on what his expectations were. Because I mean, if you had traded for Russell Wilson, this wouldn't have worked out so well. I guess maybe if you'd got to the final, I guess he did have a pretty good week 17. Yeah. But also getting lucky at trading for the right players there, but doing it early enough when the information wasn't there. Because if we knew that Joe Burrow was going to do what he did in the fantasy playoffs, that manager wouldn't have traded you for that. So you have to do it kind of without that knowledge. You traded for Renfro before he became the target hog on the Raiders and the true alpha there. So it's those unknown situations, you got to jump on them when they're unknown, because as soon as it becomes known, those player prices go up and you can't buy them for that value anymore. So kudos to you, Brad, for having some conviction and making those trades earlier than when they weren't so obvious, because that was the time to make them. That was the only time you would have been able to get those players at that price point.
Yeah, it was certainly out of my comfort zone. It's definitely something I've never really done that early and that risky, but something had to be done. I was winning games by half a point. I couldn't stomach that any longer.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, big tip of the cap for you. You know, the determining factor in successfully pulling off those types of moves where you're out on a limb is really being able to determine what's noise and what's signal, right? And it works both ways, right? If you're losing, is that something that's just kind of fluky and variance all landing on you at once, or is it something that you actually have to be worried about and make moves around, right? This player that maybe isn't quite off to as fast a start as most people projected, right? Is that circumstance, or is that something that is due for regression? So really high degree of difficulty in making that happen. And the player that I wanted to highlight is who you started with. He's actually my vote for fantasy MVP, and that's Damian Harris.
Yeah.
Guy got into the box 14 times. I remember when the Patriots released Cam Newton, I was just expecting his ADP to explode, and it never moved. He stayed right around the sixth round. So you got a guy that was getting all of the early down work and absolutely the priority option in the red zone for where people were starting to think about, their wide receiver fours and maybe thinking about a premium handcuff. And you get a piece like that deep into a draft, and it is the foundation of a team that can make a deep run. So definitely have a handful of Harris teams out there, mainly after the Cam trade, because his ADP just didn't move. It was dumbfounding.
I agree with that.
Hey, so I guess we're going to add a segment to the end of the episode. Who's the fantasy MVP? So Eric said Damian Harris. Brad, do you have a different answer? Because I know you probably would be fine voting for Damian Harris yourself.
Yeah, well, I would certainly, be okay putting a vote in for Damian Harris. But I'm going to go back to James Conner, because he really came out of nowhere. Everybody thought, that he was wasn't going to have the impact, with Chase Edmonds there, but he clearly outshined and did amazing things for the Cardinals and for people's fantasy teams.
Well, I love hearing that, especially how much James Conner I had this year. I guess in general, Brad, we talked up certain players and didn't hit on all of them, but I think like the episode we did just before the season started on the players to avoid, like we kind of did that in August. And I think that there's a lot of good stuff in that episode of sometimes just avoiding the landmines, right? Like we were pretty adamant on Chase Edmonds' price is too high. I know even in some high stakes drafts, he was going into the tail end of the third round. It made no sense when, if James Conner could be had for three rounds later. Like it just seemed like one of those obvious ones where, you could avoid this backfield entirely, but if you're going to invest in this backfield, Conner seemed like he was definitely the guy to have. And I think you both mentioned, even when, Edmonds got hurt, but it wasn't because Edmonds got hurt that Conner had success. It was the touchdowns. And that was happening even when Edmonds was in play. So, I mean, any back that gets over 15 touchdowns is going to be ridiculous. So, Eric, did you say Harris got close to that? You said 14 touchdowns?
Yeah, 14 on the season.
Anytime you're approaching close to that 15 touchdown mark, you're going to only be an RB1. So yeah, Harris and Conner for mid round picks certainly produced on it. So good calls there, guys. It's funny. The running back guy, I'm not going to go with the running back. I'm going to keep it obvious. We already talked about it. I think it's Cooper Kupp because of the, not just being the wide receiver one, but being the wide receiver one by, what was it, like maybe 4 or 5 points per game over number two. And then like you saw like a group of like, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Adams, Hill. And then it was another big drop off. So he was almost like to those guys in that maybe the wide receiver 10, 12, you're talking about it like almost a 8 to 9 point per game difference on Cooper Kupp on other wide receiver ones. Right. So I think, and again, he wasn't a first round pick. Cause part of me was thinking, how is it not Jonathan Taylor, right? Like everything he's doing, he's the RB1. He's going to be the 101 next year. But like, even when he was at his best value, you might've got him at the early second round. Whereas we talked about it, Kupp might've fallen to the fifth round and to get those numbers and like every week, just consistently putting up close to double digit points. So had a great floor, but then also the great ceiling. And that's what you need to get those like Michael Thomas 2019 seasons. Those seasons, like you're not going to necessarily get one every year. I mean, we got one this year with Cooper Kupp. There's no guarantee of ever happening. So I think it's Cooper Kupp. Cause I know for myself, every team I had with him made it to the finals. And there was a couple times where, I'm going to lose this game. And then it's a late game with the Rams and Kupp gets, two touchdowns or whatever. And it just bails you out of the week. And I felt like that was probably something that happened to a lot of managers where even if you didn't draft a great team around Cooper Kupp, if you had Kupp, it might've made the difference in certain weeks.
Yeah. Kupp is on that dynasty roster that I mentioned and broke down earlier. Right. And routinely he was delivering 25, 30, 35% of my points in a given week. And considering where he was drafted, right? His expected value was as a fringe wide receiver two, wide receiver three. And you look at the scoring output of wide receiver twos, you're essentially getting an additional flex spots worth of productivity out of Cooper Kupp relative to, the wide receivers in that 13 to 24 range. So, I mean, it is absolutely a season maker. And I know for myself, and I would assume for most people out there, he's all over the place on championship teams.
Yeah. And Brad, I want to go back to your team real quick. Something you mentioned, like your whole philosophy of needing to trade was you were winning, but just barely winning, right?
Right.
The total points is more important than the win-loss record early in the season.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, you find out more about, possible trends down the road. I mean, I feel it was a 14 team league, 8 of them go to the playoffs. I mean, so I wasn't, too concerned about not to sound too arrogant, but I mean, I wasn't too concerned about not making the playoffs, but yeah, I just wasn't happy with the production. And things had to get better and I had to start wheeling and dealing as the commissioner says.
I wouldn't say it's too arrogant, but it's also showing the priority. You're not just looking to make the playoffs. You're trying to win your league. And so you made that trade under that mentality.
Yep. Absolutely.
So yeah. So, and again, it back to the, like, yeah, the one redraft team I won with started 0-3, but didn't panic, just keep going. And I knew like some of those losses were close and I was scoring enough points to like, it was a I wasn't the last team, like even though I was last in the standings, I wasn't last in total points scored. Like it's, I think looking at that early is kind of an indication. I mean, for you, Eric, you were probably thinking, okay, you know, it for you, it was even before the season started, right? With your dynasty team was like, looking at the team before the points are being scored, you weren't sure. Then as soon as the points start getting scored, we get all that information. You adjusted and you didn't, you know, you didn't panic and blow it all up before it even got started. You had the patience to kind of wait and see, and then knowing which directions to tweak and who to sell, who to buy, and seemed, again, worked out that you made it to the finals. But I think it's not overreacting to the wins and losses early, but even before the season for dynasty teams, it's not overreacting to the team that's not scoring any points. You know, you might not think it's that great, but as soon as the season starts and the points start rolling in, you might be surprised.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we ran over our hour here, a little bit longer than we had planned, but I think good discussions, a lot of good lessons to take from 2021. So Eric, again, you can plug the Pros with Joe's Fantasy League, all that charity fun stuff, but anything else you want to plug and let us know where the people can find and follow you, what other content you're creating. This is your time now. So again, we appreciate you coming on and talking so much charity.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again for inviting me on and for sharing your platform with me. First and foremost, as always, I've got my hand out. So we are still raising money for Matt Harmon's charity. You can check us out at Pros with Joes on Twitter or at proswithjoes.com. We've also opened registration for year 3 on the website, proswithjoes.com. So you can go there and either fill out a form if you're interested in pre-registering or raise your hand if you're interested in participating as an expert, as a pro. Again, over at proswithjoes.com. In terms of where you can find me out there, if you want to hear me make more words, I am a co-host, or actually the host, technically, of the DFS Pawn Shop, a part of the Going for Two Live Network. We stream every Saturday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. Myself and my compadre, Mike Holland, go game by game to the DFS slate. We're going to run all the way through the playoffs, and then we're going to pick up some off-season content after a little break following the Super Bowl. And then more of my written work is over at drroto.com. Across DFS, across redraft, across NBA and Jock Market, I've got a piece coming out there just about every day of the week. So you can check me out on Twitter. It's at FantasyNav. And if you scroll through the feed, you'll see all those pieces coming out, and you'll see us live on Saturday nights as part of the Going for Two Live Network.
Love the Going for Two plugs. Brad, was there anything you wanted to say to Eric before we head out?
Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We thank you for your words on our podcast here. And we look forward to, having you on again and you know, checking out your content. I appreciate it.
Would love to join you again.
Awesome.
Yes, and speaking of content, we started 2022. We're here. Brad and I were planning to do a ton of content in the offseason, Dynasty, anything fantasy football related, and all that can be found on Twitter at @FPC_fantasypod for everything that we're doing on the podcast. Also, you could follow your co-host individually. Brad's at @TheRundown_BH. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app, available for free on Android and iOS stores, and it gives you access to all the great Full Press Coverage content. A lot of playoff talk right now, NFL playoffs, and all the great written content. All right, but you also have some teams already starting some draft profiles, so everything is already kind of hitting hard at Full Press Coverage. So join in, get access to all those articles, all the podcasts, access the Full Press Radio Network again for free on the Full Press Coverage app. So download today. Also, shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at @PA_II_Official for letting us use the song Melody as our intro and outro music. So thank you, PA, for that. And thank you, Eric, for joining. Again, really appreciate helping out any charity. So, of course, anything that we can do to help promote Pros with Joes, we'll gladly do here. But as Brad said, love to hear your words on the pod, and it was a lot of great content for our listeners.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. It was a fun chat.
And speaking of the listeners, Brad, any final thoughts for them?
Yeah, no, we just look forward to sharing 2022 with you guys, and thanks for listening.
Yes, as we navigate these NFL and fantasy football waters in 2022, we'll be with you every step of the way here on the Full Press Fantasy Pod.